Don't you know we're talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. Don't you know we're talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. While they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds. Poor people gonna rise up and get their share. Poor people gonna rise up and take what's there. Don't you know you better run, 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 run. Oh, I said you better run, 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 run. Cause finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about the revolution.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome to the French Connections Thursday edition. Today's date is the 3rd of August, 2006, and my name is Daryl Bradford Smith. We're here to speak the truth here as best we can find it and share it with you so that you have the ammunition you need to go forward with your decisions, and hopefully we can bring enough light onto the bad guys that we can stop them from what they're doing. The Middle East is aflame right now with an assault on Lebanon, of course, and from what I understand from other sources, the Palestinians are being attacked more violently than they've been attacked in a couple of years, according to insiders, because they've been a diversion away from the news in Palestine for Lebanon. But what we're going to talk about today with a returning guest is, his name is Reuven Shosin. He's been with me before. He's somebody who left the Israeli army because of his sentiments against what he saw in when he was in the army and different things that were going on. And since he left, he's asked for a political asylum to leave. And I don't remember if you were granted that political asylum. I'm going to bring him up right now. Reuven, are you with me?
Yes, thank you for inviting me.
Well, I'm glad to have you here. Were you actually granted asylum?
Not yet. Since our last talk, I have been in Oakland and San Francisco, which are the most liberal cities in the United States, where the more comfortable place to seek for the asylum. Unfortunately, I cannot afford what the lawyers there were asking for.
Mm-hmm.
My visa is running out. Most probably in a few weeks from now, I will need to leave the United States.
Well, I thought you didn't need a visa if you're from Israel.
Well, we are not there yet, but it's coming, you know.
Well. And here's the thing. We discussed yesterday when we were planning to do the show about the way that you've been followed, you've been monitored, you've been researched, you've been looked into by agents of the Israeli government. You believe that, according to your statements, that you've been a target of attempted assassinations in many different parts of the world, and you are still being monitored and watched in Arizona. And I'm wondering in New Mexico, I'm sorry. And you, could you tell the listeners here some of the experiences you've had and what kind of things happen to you, so that they can get a feel for the kind of monitoring that goes on inside the United States?
Well, the story is too long. I will not go into the details, into all the details right now. But maybe just the main point. You know, after my first interview with you about a month and a half ago, I signed a contract for my book called Oligarchy and published a couple of articles called We the People and the Semantics of War, A Knife for an Eye. apparently these various media events weren't to the liking of the state of Israel, and the Israeli response was through two new threats against my life. You know, I really don't look anymore at all the watchers looking around me and following wherever I'm in a public place. I don't care about that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, there were two very clear threats against my life. The first came through a Mossad agent called Adi Ezra, who participated in my persecution in Asia. That was almost 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back then, he told me that I should have medical insurance, and he told me that just a few days before I was shot up. So there was an intention there. At the time he told me that, I answered that I considered that to be a threat. That sentence of him and other ones appear in my declaration of refuge that has been recognized by the Republic of Bolivia.
Okay.
That declaration reached the State of Israel and for sure the Mossad. There is no one that can claim that I don't consider such a sentence as a threat.
Yeah.
After the publications of the last month, he approached me by email and asked to make a phone call to the place I was living in Oakland. I agreed. I was curious to see what he has to say. Interestingly enough, one of the sentences was that I should have a medical insurance, and then he became very graphic of an unexpected circumstance and an unexpected visit of mine to a hospital that will cost me thousands of dollars per day and I won't be able to pay.
Hmm. Well, you know, they've actually threatened me over here, and I brought my threats to the John Domery here, and they took it quite seriously. They did not think for a minute it wasn't real. And they have on record several things, and in fact, I took it seriously as well. And so I understand what that feels like. It's not a very comfortable thing to have leveled against you, Reuven. I know that. The second one was whom? And could you give us some details on this?
Maybe some of the listeners will say he's imagining everything, you know?
But well, I mean, the threats that I got were actually in writing, and that's why I had something to go to the gendarmes with. And if she sent you she said some things like that to you, then that's pretty solid, solid stuff there, Reuven. I mean, you know.
Well, you know, if that is not solid enough, a few days later, I had another threat, and that was a more intriguing one. The second one came through a person, a Mossad agent. Now I can tell you, he's a Mossad agent called Michael Korn.
Mm-hmm.
He was born in the United States. He spent more than 20 years in Israel, and now he's back here working within the Zionist Christian community in Denver, Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
My story with this person is very interesting. After the first article about me was published by Mother Media, March this year, he wrote a response to the article presenting himself as a converted Jew, as a Christian. He congratulated me for the article. I say thank you, and I forgot about that. But shortly later, he began bombarding my email with all kind of very strange emails.
Yeah.
I will not go into the details. We don't have time, but it was a kind of provocator agent policy. You see, they send you all kind of stuff, and they see what kind of responses they can get out of you. So they can link you with whatever they like or they feel.
Well, I've had Mr. Korn. He's actually written me many emails as well, this guy.
Yes, I'm sure. He's approaching everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was the first sign, the very first strange sign about him. The second one And that made me very suspicious, but I knew for certain after my first interview with you. After that, he got another interview. He got an interview at the program of Michael Collins Piper. And very, very surprisingly, he basically claimed very similar things to the ones I claim, but he was very careful to take out the sting of the arguments. Basically, there is one sentence that you can hear. You can find his interview in the AVN. He claimed that the rabbis, the rabbinical Pharisees, Jews, mm-hmm. are the same as the Christians without the recognition of Jesus.
Well, you and I both know that's not true.
Oh, of course, in such a way they make them appear as nice people. You know, they take out all of the diabolical elements of the beliefs.
Yeah.
This is not a theological interview, so we will not go into the details. I will keep to the story. After I listened to this interview, I was sure that he is working for the Mossad. Within the Zionist Christian communities here in the state, and I decided to pass through his home in Denver in my way back from San Francisco to New Mexico, where I'm living right now. I stopped there for one day, and I must tell you it was the most frightening day in the last year.
What happened? Give us the details.
You know, the most interesting sentence, and don't forget that we are talking about someone that claims to be a Christian. And he told me that Israeli thugs will hit my head with sticks until nothing is left over my shoulders. And then he added, sometimes I want to kill somebody. Does that sound like a Christian statement to you?
No, and he said this while you were in his home?
Yes. He's living, he doesn't have a home, he's living with Zionist Christians over there. He invited me for a walk next to his home, and then he told these things, among other things. I will tell you a few others. And then I decided to leave on the same day. He was, you know, he continued the provocator agent job, and he offered me political asylum in Iran, suddenly. He told me he has contacts, he can make me contacts in Iran and send me over there. And then, 10 seconds later, he tells me, you know, I can get for you a fake American passport, so you can go back into Israel so nobody will know. And visit the country. You know, maybe they wanted to see which kind of people I'm going to contact over there. Well, we didn't talk about that, but I'm a member of an underground evangelical church in Israel, and the Mossad have been for years pressing on that issue, trying to get my contacts in Israel, my evangelical contacts. And
mm-hmm.
that's the thing that, you know, I will not turn over my brothers.
Well, you know, here's the thing. Israel Shamir was on my show recently for about 7 or 8 minutes. And he sent an email out to someone who asked him why it was so short. And he answered the email by saying that I was, that he could be arrested for speaking to me because I am a big enemy of Israel, apparently. That's what they're saying. And that to speak to Daryl Bradford Smith is a dangerous thing, and that he feared for his safety and his freedom. Is that reasonable to assume that speaking to me on the radio is that dangerous?
Yes, I can believe that. I can believe those threats, no problem. You know, basically I'm touching that very issue in my last article. And maybe that's the moment to invite your listeners to visit my website, shosem.com.
Mm-hmm.
they can found an eye for an eye, the semantics of war, over there, though without the picture I'm speaking about.
Yeah.
And in that article, I basically claim that Israel have lost, the state of Israel, have lost all its bonds with humanity. It is perpetrating crimes against humanity, and its leaders should stand to trial on an international court. And you know, I was taught at the Israeli secondary school, while learning about the Nazi regime, that every soldier must say no to immoral orders. And I'm calling now to every Israeli soldier and officer to refuse the orders and drop their weapons and walk back home. This is the time to say no to a criminal regime.
I agree with that. And here's the interesting thing, though. You and I both know that they believe, at least the rabbinical part of the Jewish state of Israel, believes that that they are somehow a different race of human. They're different, and they have a more developed soul, and they have a more developed race, and that we are less than them in their religious sense. And therefore, to kill us is not as bad a thing as it would be for anybody else. Now, I've heard this same thing stated before, Reuven, and I'm wondering if that's a kind of attitude that is instructed to the Israeli public. I mean, do they learn this kind of attitude in their daily lives, or am I reaching for straws here?
You know, that's the very central thesis of my book, Holigarchy. I claim that supremacist claim the Pharisees have leaked into the secular Israeli state. And, you know, it's ruining these people.
But you also are aware, I'm sure, of the extensive work. Maybe you don't know this man, but his name is Jim Condit. Jim Condit has done some research on the origins of Nazism and the financing of the Nazi regime in the 1930s, and also the top leadership of the Nazi regime. And he found that most of the top leaders were either Jewish or half-Jewish, including Adolf Hitler. And Adolf Hitler's whole family, they ended up bulldozing the cemetery where he was from so that they get rid of the evidence. And all of his birth records of everyone in his family were burned. Now, here's the interesting thing. This comes from about 10 different researchers who have been doing this research for 70 years, and it's been confirmed in several different ways. And what I'm saying to you is that in order to build the state of Israel on the lands of Palestine, what they needed to do was they needed a population to be displaced from Europe over there. And there was a deal made in the 1930s to ship the Jews from Germany and Poland over to Palestine, and many people didn't want to go. They didn't want to go to this desert location. They wanted to stay and be Europeans. And of course, it also had the effect of segregating the population. And so, what we know today is that these same kind of actions of supremacy that were coming out of the Nazi regime are actually the same kinds of things coming out of Israel right now.
The Israeli regime is going into very dangerous directions. You know, I really usually don't like to go into the racist definitions because in a sense it's playing into their hands. At the moment that I begin to consider myself as belonging to a certain ethnic group or to a certain religion or to whatever other categorization, mm-hmm. I am playing into the hands of certain supremacist groups.
Well, see, now, but I, what I'm trying to do here, and I want you to understand my take on this, I need to find out what's going on in the minds of the people doing these things,
yes.
And I need to understand their motivations here.
And I gave you an exact answer. The people over Israel, the people in Israel, Israeli citizens, believe deep into their hearts that they are better. That they are better of any other human. Just because of their supposed genetic pool.
Wow.
Well, see, now, the supposed genetic pool is a very important definition, because when you walk in the Israeli street, you see that Israelis from European background look like European people, and Israelis from Oriental background look as Oriental people. And, you know, after thousands of years, I think that there is very little left of the original genetic pool that they claim to belong to.
Well, here's the interesting thing. The Arabs are also Semitic peoples, and so to call someone an anti-Semite would mean that they were also could be against Arabs as well. If you take a look at the origins of different groups of people, and you know as well as I do, I'm not angry with individual Jews here, because I happen to know many from New York and from Massachusetts and from Florida that are not involved in these kind of activities. They go to work every day. Some of them are bureaucrats. Some of them own little businesses. They're nice people. Now, maybe their leadership is doing these bad things, Reuven, but these people I don't believe are. And I have to be careful when I talk about the Jewish community, because I know not everybody's involved. And it would be a terrible thing for us to say today that this entire group of people is bad. And you know that as well as I do. And
we are all humans.
That's right.
We are all humans. That's the only definition that has any value.
That's right.
Any other definition is a game played by oligarchies.
That's
in
right.
order to take control of innocent people.
I agree. I agree with that statement of 100%, Reuven, and I think it's powerful. Do you have any other things you're willing to share with us regarding, the machinations of the State of Israel, or things that you last time you were on the show, you wanted to be specific about our conversation, but it seems you're a little more forthcoming today, and I'm wondering if you have other things to share with us.
Well, you know, you began this talk by asking regarding the persecutions of the last month, and maybe it's a time to make a few comments regarding some methods of operations preferred by the State of Israel and its illegal arm, the
Mossad. Mm-hmm.
I think that the last time we spoke, we didn't have the time to comment about the communications control, the overwhelming communications control by the State of Israel.
Meaning what, telephone and internet, you mean?
Telephone and internet. But, you know, the first technology here, the first relevant technology is a technology that used the telephone backbone, and it's still the most impressive one, at least in my eyes. And, you know, I had a few friends, and I will not comment regarding their names or their positions in the industry over there, but I have very good sources on what I'm going to say. The exceptional tracking power of the State of Israel is based on two combined technologies. One is the access to all the phones that are connected to switchboards produced by an Israeli company called Converse. They have changed names in the last years a couple of times. I'm not sure that this is the actual name, but in the past it was Converse. The point is that those switchboards have backdoors, and those backdoors are accessible by the Israeli military.
Ah.
Now, by itself, it's a very interesting technology, especially when it has been marketed all over the world, giving access to a big part of the world phones, but in itself it's not enough. The point is that it's combined with a secondary technology, which is computer-based, and it's the technology of voice recognition algorithms. You know, I am sure by now that they had samples of my voice, many samples, and they have algorithms able to transform this voice into a pattern, you know, a pattern that it's not confused by me, my being called or by using a napkin over the microphone. A very basic characteristic of your personal voice.
Because today's phone systems run on numeric transfer of information. What, in other words, once it gets to a switching point, it becomes digitized. And what it does is it recognizes that digital signal, doesn't it?
Exactly. What happens is that in Israel there are two supercomputers. By the way, they were given by the government of the United States to perform scientific research. Scientific research in the eyes of the state of Israel means listening to our other people's conversations.
Ah.
Now, these supercomputers can search for the pattern they were asked all over the switchboards that are connected to them. So you see, let's say that you are in Buenos Aires now, and
mm-hmm.
Buenos Aires has a switchboard which is connected to the Israeli supercomputer. By the way, the two supercomputers are in Glilot, Herzliya, very close to the Mossad headquarters.
Mossad University. Mark Rich built a thing over there. So did the Lauder family. They built a big, huge buildings for that school, the Mossad school.
Yes, most of that is underground. When you pass next to the site, you see very little buildings, very few buildings.
Mm.
Few and low buildings. But you see, the point, let's say you are in Buenos Aires and you want to make a phone from a pay phone which is connected to one of these switchboards, and they are searching for you and they have the pattern of your voice. As soon as you begin speaking, that pattern will be recognized by the computers in Israel and they will have your exact location.
That's scary.
Yes, that's scary. And, you know, the same goes for the Internet. They have access to the backbone, to the Internet backbone. They can track down all your communications. I have many stories about emails of mine being blocked or even changed in the last years. Maybe the best, a good example I can share with the listeners, it's 1 year ago, I sent one of the chapters of my book to a friend in Israel to get a review. And the chapter was almost 2,900 words. Without telling anyone, the next day I called my friend when he was in the office and told him, open now this file and count the words. And guess what? 300, 200, 300 words were missing. They dropped out of the copper lines.
I'm wondering, are they also involved in the European phone structure? I mean, I know France Telecom has its own independent system, and they run it separate from the rest of the world almost.
You know, let me tell you another story of the last days. I was very worried about after the events with Michael Cohen.
Yeah.
And when I arrived to New Mexico, I sent an email to my friends in Bolivia. You know, the Republic of Bolivia has recognized me as a political refugee. So I sent an email to them saying that I get the details of a planned trip. And I told them that if I don't manage to arrive, if I don't appear, please contact Amnesty International, that I have been kidnapped. One day after that, I made a phone call to confirm the details, to make sure that they have received the email and they are on alert about my location. And guess what? That email didn't arrive.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've had problems getting emails to other people in the United States from here. Sometimes they do arrive and sometimes they don't. I can tell you this. There are other places, such as MySpace, which has been undergoing terrible censorship and control issues. But when you take a look at the infrastructure of the Internet, almost every single organization running the Internet has been compromised in one way or another. Am I correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So basically we're using their system to communicate, and so they basically know what's happening.
It's not that they know what's happening. They are intervening with what's happening. At the moment that I cannot be sure that my emails arrive, at the moment that my emails are being changed, they are changing reality.
Yeah.
And they have no mandate to do that. That these are completely illegal operations by illegal arms of illegal governments.
Yeah. I agree with that. And here's the interesting thing, as I see it. They're having a lot of trouble with their public relations campaign right now. They're having big trouble. I remember when Eric and myself, we got started on this fight some 11 months ago. We actually Googled the word Zionism.
Yes.
And we got 1,700 responses on Google. Today there are 7.8 million. Now, that'll tell you what the change has been in 11 months. That has to be worrying them, Reuven.
You know, they shouldn't be worried if they would abide to laws. Don't you agree with me?
I do. If they were if they were good international citizens in a country that was following the rule of law and not indiscriminately murdering and committing acts of genocide or destruction of cultures and people, we wouldn't have a problem right now, but that's certainly not the case.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, Reuven, I did an interview last night with a man who was on the ship, the USS Liberty.
Yes.
And he told me in a private call that there are many men who were terribly injured during that attack by Israel in 1967 that have had as many as 30 or 40 surgeries, and they've spent their entire lives in physical agony, and no justice, none. Now, this is only one example of hundreds I can cite where there have been heinous acts that have been committed, here's the sickest thing. It's in the name of a religion, it's in the name of a culture and a people. This is the most awful thing to do because, you know, I always believed when I was growing up that religions were supposed to present themselves as being hopeful and helpful and kind and generous and loving and honest and all of the very righteous and good things that we discuss. And what I'm finding out is that something quite different is the truth, it's painful to see this.
You know, maybe the events that led me to write the "An Eye for an Eye: The Semantics of War" were two emails. One is not relevant now, but the second one contained two pictures. One of the pictures was of young Israeli girls writing hate messages on artillery shells aimed to Lebanon.
Yeah.
I have analyzed that picture very carefully. The hands writing the message are confident Hebrew hands. They even have the regular spelling errors of Israeli children. The military equipment belongs to the Israeli army. I was convinced that that was a genuine picture. Moreover, no one of my friends in Israel claimed that that was a false picture.
Mm-hmm.
The second picture I added to that was, just the other side, a small Lebanese dead child.
Yeah.
And I sent that to my friends in Israel. And one of them, a major in the Israeli army, told me, you know, in big, capital, bold letters, they are criminals.
The children are.
His answer to a dead Lebanese child was, but they are criminals. And I think that there's all the...
Well, you have to say that he's not any longer your friend. That's monstrous. That's monstrous.
No, he's not my friend. If you will read... our exchange of emails in the last DLC, he's not my friend.
No, certainly not. But is that indicative of the belief system of the military, or do you think many of the military are starting to feel that this is a horrible and wrong approach to to Hezbollah and you know, in Lebanon and the rest of it. There must be some people with conscience there. I have to believe that.
The problem is that the public there is brainwashed. You know, the last series of events began when one soldier was captured on Gaza and two soldiers were captured in southern Lebanon.
Yes.
The definition is important. They were captured. They were soldiers in a military action that were captured.
That's right.
But when you read the Israeli media, the newspapers, the radio, the television, you don't see that they were captured.
They were kidnapped, according to them.
They were kidnapped.
Yeah.
And these semantics have kidnapped the mind of a whole nation. Because people are hysterical over there about the kidnapping issue.
Now,
we're not picking flowers at the mother's garden.
But Reuven, are there people of conscience who are just plain afraid to say something?
You know, living in Israel, you are afraid. Because living in Israel, you know that your phones are being listened, that your internet is being watched, and you know, you never know who your friends are. I had a few surprises after I left there. So people are afraid to speak out. You know, and the Israeli security services, the internal ones, I'm not speaking about the Mossad, I'm speaking about the Shabak, are playing with the Israeli population. You know, one of the most amazing pictures of the last days was, a protest event in Tel Aviv.
Yes.
And you could see the pictures, and you see people wearing red shirts with communist signs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you see that. I saw that, and I couldn't understand. What kind of communists are those? Since when you have communists walking with, marching with red flags in the streets of Israel? And I want to tell you something. These were not protesters. These were implanted by the Shabak as a provocation. That was a message to the Israeli public, that if they go out and protest, they will be labeled as communists. And, you know, in a sense, criminals.
And isn't the whole kibbutz system a communist system?
The kibbutz was never really communist. There was only one kibbutz that was openly communist. The other were kind of socialist.
That's a semantics right there, Reuven, because communism and socialism are not separated by very much space.
Well, it's not exactly semantics. I touched that in one of the chapters of my book. The kibbutzim were a kind of oligarchy. They have very little to do with socialism. It doesn't matter. The point is that in 2006, you cannot find enough communists in Israel to make, especially young ones, making a march in the open streets. You see that, and you understand that this is a machination by the Shabak, the Internal Security Service, to frighten the rest of the public. It's a subliminal message telling the people, if you will go out protesting, we will transform you into communists. We will transform you into criminals. We will ruin your name. We will ruin your lives.
Oh, and how many
the
people...
The message maybe to you from outside is not clear. You will say, oh, how nice. They have protesting people. But to someone living inside that society, the message is very clear and very frightening.
Well, now I've got a question regarding the recent demand that 100,000 Israelis hit the internet with propaganda to fight the negative press coming out on Israel. And have you seen evidence of this stuff? We've seen it. Eric and I have discussed it. A lot of the chat rooms and forums and are just being bombarded by attacks from people. Pro-Israeli, and of course, lots of things are being written everywhere. Have you been noticing an increase?
You know, I'm very glad you asked this question. You know, you asked before regarding more technical issues regarding the persecution techniques of the State of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
But at the bottom line is that we always move back to the humans behind the system. And I explain about the technical methods used in the communications, but the Mossad relies mainly on its human touch. You know, it's an organization being run by people, and they have some extremely well-developed techniques to deal with issues like the present one through regular, normal associations, which will divert the you know, the finger from them into other people. And it's, you know, the Mossad is very interesting in this context. Basically, they are working through four levels of agents. The first level and the most rare to find is what is called the agent runners. You have very few of those. Mostly they are very, they move a lot between one country and another, running the different operations of the Mossad all over. And they are not of much interest to us. The second level, which is the one you are most likely to find, is the agents themselves. Usually the agents are young Israelis or young Jewish people, the second category, I will touch it in a few minutes, which have some basic training, each one of them in different specialties. They are seldom independent. They don't move much alone. Usually they are moving around in groups, two, three, four. You know, like groups of art students, or like the group of Israelis that was caught filming the 9/11 event. These kind of agents. You know, people like Michael Cohen, which hide inside the Zionist Christian community and are changing the messages there to the liking of the Mossad. That's the next level. The third level, it's maybe it's the most frightening one, is an expansive network of collaborators. Most of them belong to the Jewish communities abroad that willingly or not willingly, they can be forced to cooperate. They provide a much-needed logistic support to the agents and their officers. Traditionally, these collaborators are Jewish, but, you know, in the last months when I was in, when I passed through Colorado, I saw Zionist Christians collaborating, helping Michael Cohen with his machinations. And this is a very, very worrying sign, because it means that the Mossad is free to work now, not only in places where you have huge Jewish communities, but everywhere. And the fourth and maybe lowest group in these categories are bribed locals, you know, citizens that can be bribed to perform certain services, like lawyers. I have one lawyer in my asylum case in Bolivia bribed. Afterwards, he was caught. It's a fascinating story. He was caught and fired afterwards, but he was bribed by the state of Israel to change my declaration in such a way that it lost its message.
Ah.
And you see, at the moment that you begin looking at these four levels as a whole operation, a whole human operation aimed to change the framework and methods of operation of innocent organizations so that they serve the evil machinations of the Mossad and the criminal state of Israel, then it becomes frightening.
Well, now, I have a question for you. How do they operate within the political structure of America that you know of? I mean, what we know today is that the entire executive branch, our judicial branch, our APEC group, the B'nai B'rith International, Southern Poverty Law Center, People for the American Way, they're all very aggressive and very even evil in many, many ways. I mean, they're not averse to violence. They're not averse to criminality. And they have virtually taken over the American government. And do you have any idea how the Mossad works within the AIPAC and the rest of these organizations?
I tell you the truth, such a question a bit embarrasses me, because, you know, when I'm in an interview, I'm supposed to say new things. And actually, if you read the Israeli media in Hebrew, it's all over the place, all over the newspapers. You can read there how Israel, through local communities in the United States, plays both sides of the game and gives donations to political people in both parties, in both main parties in the United States, so that these people depend on Jewish-Israeli donations for their campaigns. It's all over the Israeli media. You see that all the time.
Yeah. Well, you've probably read several articles about Mel Gibson, and of course, Mel Gibson's Passion of the Christ was very, very damaging to the Jewish community in their view, and they decided to make him a target. Now, of course, he helped them out in many ways by drunk driving, of course, and made him set himself up to be victimized, but they have come out in some very powerful ways to destroy his character, and they're trying to paint him as insane.
You know, the state of Israel cannot defend its policies. It's an evil country committing crimes. There is no other name to what is going over there. And the problem is that when they cannot fight toes with toes, when they cannot defend their points of view, they attack the persons that are showing that the emperor has no clothes.
Yeah.
And making a personal attack is the easiest thing. You know, and in a sense, it shows the very basic way of thinking. The Pharisaic Jews consider themselves to be just, the chosen people.
Yeah.
They think that they are perfect. Hence, they can criticize every little sin of any other person. And maybe this is the main difference. You know, Christians consider themselves to be sinners. It's a way of acknowledging that we are not perfect. No one of us is perfect.
That's right.
Not even if you call yourself rabbi.
I
would be very glad if instead of looking at Mel Gibson's life, they will try to answer to the right issue. And the right issue here is that they have manipulated the Roman Empire into killing an innocent person. And in the same way that they have manipulated the Roman Empire, they are manipulating nowadays the American Empire.
Yeah, and they did the same thing in Turkey with the Donmar. They did the same thing in Russia after they got control back from Stalin. You can see these things that have happened in history. And you know, they tried to do it in Spain under Isabella and Ferdinand and were rebuffed. But the attempts have always been made in history. And you can see history describing it if you find the right information. Of course, they've done a good job of stealing away the truth from history books. But the history is still available, is it not?
Well, you just point the facts out.
That's right. Well, you know, Reuven, this battle we're in, I mean, it really is for, I think, it seems to be shaping up that they want to start an all-out war in the entire Middle East region against Islam, and they want to use Christian countries to fight it for them. And they want to play one off against another and start an area-wide war extending from Iran all the way down into Egypt. And I'm wondering, how do you see that? Are they succeeding in their attempt, or are we rebuffing their attempt to do this?
You know, let me go back 20 minutes in our conversation, and let's redefine countries. Okay, I don't want to define countries as Christians or Buddhist or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I would prefer to define countries as human countries and inhuman countries.
Okay.
And what we have here is very clear, an unhuman country of Israel. Okay? Israel, it's not a human country.
Yeah.
They have betrayed all bonds with humanity.
I call them a tumor, and that Zionism is a cancer. And I say the country of Israel is a tumor.
You know,
and they need to be removed from the body of humanity, because now that doesn't mean the Jewish people are not salvageable. I believe that they are, and I believe that Jewish people need to know what their leadership has done in their name. But I don't believe many of them know. I think many of them are brainwashed.
You know, Zionism is just an offspring of a darker and much older ideology called Phariseeism.
What is it called?
Phariseeism. It goes back to the Pharisees.
Yes.
So that's a very long conversation. I'm not sure that we have the time today, but let's not forget that.
Yeah.
It's a long way back in history.
Yeah. Well, you know, today's conversation went several places, but I think it gave people a picture of what we were really talking about yesterday when we were setting this up. The idea that there is a very complex web of control. There is a powerful group of intimidators out there who are forcing the story in the directions they'd like it to go in. We do have an opportunity here, I believe, as we are speaking. There is a great groundswell in the world against the actions in Lebanon and in Palestine, and I believe their hubris and their own arrogance has worked against them in a very serious way here. And I'm wondering if you think that we can turn this around, because it looks like we've been given a very big opportunity here. What do you think?
I don't think that that's an opportunity. I think that that's our responsibility.
It is a responsibility.
We should speak out as loud as we can, because any other behavior is collaborating with them. You cannot keep quiet. If you keep quiet, you are helping them.
You've spoken truth. It rings powerfully here, Reuven. You know, and there is not a single thing that you have said here today that I don't think is an honest statement. And I got to be honest with you, it's refreshing to know that there are, and you're ethnically Jewish, you're a Christian, but you're ethnically from that community, that there is hope that many people from that community will wake up, because I believe part of our need is to get people from within that organization to say to themselves, this is not human. And like people like Israel Shamir and yourself and others, Michelle Shasadovsky, many people across the world who are Jewish and come from Jewish heritage that are saying, this is enough now, and this is the kind of participation that we desperately need.
Thank you.
Well, it's a truthful statement that I just made, because certainly in this battle, I don't want innocent Jewish people to be injured or any innocent. Come on, whether they're Lebanese Christians or Lebanese Muslims or whatever, it doesn't matter. They're human beings. They're part of our family. There's no reason why we should be having these kind of horrible events taking place. And it is responsibility of every single person on this planet right now to stand up and be outraged. And the fact that we're not, Reuven, is painful to me. It shows how much we have lost. See, America is propagandized through their press that's also controlled by the same interests. And so is the Europeans. So my point is, how are we going to break this hammerlock, this headlock that they have us in with this propaganda machine? Because the propaganda comes from movies, from television series, from news reports, from sporting events. There's nothing that happens on that idiot box called a television that is not geared toward controlling the way you think.
You are perfectly right. And as I always say, the only thing we can, maybe the most important thing we must do, is to speak out whenever we can, wherever we can, and we should not be intimidated by the size of the media. You know, the media is like a leaf in the wind. One day it's in this direction, the other way, the other day it's in the other direction. So we need to keep speaking. We need to keep making the truth come out, and hope that enough people will begin to understand that, because that's the secret of the game, you know, just convincing enough people about what's going on, making the change of enough people, of the minds of enough people, so that these evil people will not, in Israel, will not be able to manipulate the news anymore. The news and the media and the movies and the newspapers.
Well, let me say this to you, Reuven. I'm proud of you. I'm proud of what you've done. I support your efforts to get situated in America. I hope everything in that area is successful for you. Please give your email address and the name of your book and how people can pay more attention to what you're doing.
Yes, they can reach me at my website. All the details are on my website. It's www.shosen, S-C-H-O-S-S-E-N, like my last name, .com. There they will find details about my book, Holigarchy. They will find the last couple of articles I published that we were speaking about. And they will find also the option to make donations, which I need very much in these days, to pay for legal costs of getting an asylum here, political asylum in the United States.
Well, I do know it's these days people are finding it harder and harder to survive. We've got an economic calamity on its way as well, and this is also weighing heavy on people. And I got to be honest with you, I know it's been difficult for both Eric and myself to make ends meet with our work that we do. And so I understand that you need that, and I'm going to urge everybody, if they've got a little extra, to consider helping Reuven out with that, because this is a tough fight, and he's been very courageous in standing up. And we're going to talk about other subjects in future conversations, Reuven, because your story is powerful, and there is a lot of insight coming from you. And I want to thank you again for doing this show for the second time.
Thank you very much to you and the listeners.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, Reuven Shosen, he's a rare individual here. Hopefully he'll be less rare if people can start getting the courage to stand up. And I say that to the Israelis who are also fearful, but they need to find the courage to stand up and be human beings of conviction, because we need everybody in this human family to come together and stop what they see going on. And I'm certain that there are many people in Israel right now who are quiet out of fear, but they are not alone. And Reuven has proven that standing up is the right track to take. And so I want to tell him my hat's off to him. Until the next broadcast, ladies and gentlemen, this is Daryl Bradford Smith saying good night and be well. Bye-bye now.